You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. It is way past time for us to have another really kick-ass action film with lots of people being brutally murdered by a dramatically emotionally tortured hero. And that's why we've got Monkey Man, which honestly, the fact that this film that is like half in English and half, and I don't know the language, it is somewhere in India.
Hindi, probably.
With an entirely Indian cast, largely except Charlotte Copley, yeah, is getting a wide release. It speaks volumes the fact that Hollywood isn't sitting on a lot of material to release right now.
They just did have a writer's strike.
Yeah, they did. I'm just
saying, a little behind.
I'm grateful. I wish this would this sort of thing would happen more because I'm.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got the Beekeeper.
Shut up.
But I think the fact that it has Jordan Peele as a producer who's
sure. But I mean, like that happens all the time now with international films. It's more common than you think for them to get like big name American people to go like, hey, these international releases can actually do quite well, but not as much in America.
And the Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, Godzilla Minus One, which no one saw that being as big a hit as it was, but Jesus Christ, yeah, was it ever.
Fucking kick-ass movie.
I was going to wait for VOD, but you guys twisted my arm enough. I went out to see it in the theater, and I was not disappointed.
It also has weird American sensibilities to it that really like work to its favor, but anyways.
I think it shows that there is a, which is great, I hope this lasts in producers and distributors' minds, a thirst for something different in America. We're like, okay, we don't care that these are people of a different color or in a different language if the movie kicks ass. And God knows I've seen so many movies like this just disappear.
Kicking ass is the universal language.
Kicking ass is the universal, well, universal
I
language.
I wonder how much of that is the fact that like Parasite won Best Picture. I think it really blew open a lot of doors for people to...
You could be right.
Yeah, also, I was thinking the same
like
thing.
That and also with how well like people were really clamoring for a Black Panther movie, and they brought that in with a largely African and African cast and yeah, with an African-American director. Like, yeah, we are seeing that tide change. I think that has a lot to do with... I would say maybe those two movies really jump-started that.
Well, I'm excited because I think that every... You know, any sort of artistic closed environment is going to become stale unless you release sort of new ideas into it. And this is what's happening. We're getting some new ideas here. Even though Monkey Man is largely based on the storytelling form of 70s Shaw Brothers martial arts films.
Had to get that in there.
Of which I've seen... Well, I mean, because it's really true.
Oh, I know. I'm just fucking with
it's
you.
It's deeply true. I've watched so many of these, especially in the last year or so, and I'm like, wow, this is just going down the tick
off
the marks list.
As I was coming into the screening, that the second we'd get out of it, he would be like, this reminds me of the 70s kung fu films that I am very well versed in.
Because it's true.
I know.
But I mean, also, I mean, this is, if you were... Because I know we're going to talk about the plot somewhat, but this is a boilerplate plot.
Definitely.
It's like, you know, guy needs revenge. Something terrible happens to his family. He grows up. He finds the people who did it. He figures out how to bring them down. Mayhem ensues.
He's told a lot about a legend that mirrors his life.
Yeah. The plot is simple, yeah, but it, like anything else, it's what you do with it and the specificity of that environment. It's set in Mumbai, although they call it Yatana, I think. Hmm. It's like a fictional city. But yeah, you've seen this a billion times, but you haven't seen it on the streets of Mumbai, done this way with an entirely, you know, East Asian cast and starring Dev Patel, who we've all seen do great work in other things, sure, but now also proving himself as a director.
Yeah, his directorial debut in this film. And the story is by him, and he co-wrote the screenplay with two other guys. But here to kick ass and take names they probably will pronounce incorrectly are...
And I'm all out of bubblegum. Nathan Flynn over here.
I'm Marco, and I am not out of beer yet.
I'm Mike, and I have neither of those.
And I'm Chris.
I have a bubble gut.
And I got everything. So it's all good here, including knowledge, extensive knowledge of 70s Shaw Brothers.
Thank you, Professor Chris.
As Nathan pointed out.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
You're welcome. I'm waiting for MBR to give me a call. Deb Patel, who has certainly more than proven himself as an actor over the years with any number of really good films, going back to the award-winning Slumdog Millionaire with him playing the lead role in that.
Excellent film.
But more recently with The Green Knight, which sadly was criminally underseen, but I thought was just a
really great movie. He
great
rubs
film.
His cum, you know, with a rag. And
you know, I've actually never seen it, but I have heard glowing things about it. I'll bet you I have to check that out.
Oh, dude, definitely.
I love A24 stuff. For some reason, dude. I think I might have been sick when that came out, probably.
It's so fucking up your alley, man.
Yeah, but as Marco said, this is definitely a revenge film, but a little different than maybe, you know, your John Wick, that sort of thing. There is a dog. The dog lives. Spoiler. But
you took here, the point that's going to drive it even a point higher for me, because y'all know me. I love dogs. And if I see a dog get hurt, I get pissed off.
I was going to leave that out because I just wanted people to squirm wondering. Now you've taken that away from them.
I was alternating between going, oh, cute puppy, too. Oh, please don't do it.
I will never understand this. I'm always like, I'm judging you harsher as a person for having no problem watching people getting murdered, but a dog getting fake murdered.
You were never worried. Bother you? You were never worried about all the innocent
if it was a cat
and
Chris.
Human trafficking victims.
No, I'm
this
the
movie.
Same. I'm like, whatever. It didn't really hurt the cat. I can separate fantasy from reality.
I've been more willing to let movies like that slide, but I still have never seen John Wick a second time, and even then, when I knew the scene with the dog was coming, I did walk out of the theater for 5 minutes.
I know no one who is more sensitive to this than my good friend Brian Salisbury, and even he was like, no, I can watch this movie over and over again because it's the ultimate vindication for dogs getting hurt in movies, because every person who dies horribly in this movie is because they hurt a dog, and that makes it okay.
It's the easiest crystal clear motivation ever.
Anyway, this particular one, Kid, which is what Deb Patel is known as, although they don't really say his name much, but he's a fighter. He wears a monkey mask, and he's like, it's like Charlton Copley has a small part as the announcer, sort of organizer for this underground fight club thing, where, you know, it's all set up in advance. Like, Monkey Man gets up there, Kid gets up there with a mask on, he does well for 2 rounds and then loses. And it's very intentional, and he gets the shit beat out of him on the reg. So he does that, but we're like, who is this guy? And we see little flashes of his childhood, not really knowing what this is all about. And the movie sort of delivers the background like a piecemeal and little bits and pieces here with these little flashbacks that he has. So we start to realize something bad happened when he was a kid. And we see him trying to get doing whatever he can to get inside of this, you know, rich people's world, where he starts as like a kitchen guy and then wants to become a waiter for the VIP type room with like high priced strippers and all that sort of thing. But it's where the richest and most powerful in society congregate. And we see that this richest and powerful of society is now on their way to a successful election, most likely of a new leader that is kind of racist against Muslims and wants to wipe them all out.
This is the most topical part of the movie.
Yeah.
No, because this is actually happening. I mean, only this year. I mean, they had something similar where like the predominant Hindu culture tore down like some, basically reclaim some land that the Muslims were like, hey, this is our area.
Yeah.
And so something similar happens, but Chris is right. It takes a long time structurally to map out what's really a simple revenge story.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
that was my biggest problem that I had with the movie.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
With adding the element, of course, of like, and this is the part that goes most specifically back to the Shaw Brothers stuff, that he's not going to win the first time, and then he's got to go through training montages and stuff and a spiritual reawakening to be able to get the power to come back and defeat
the Dark Knight Rises, but in Bollywood.
And I think the strength here, though, is even though, like, you know, you go into this watching, expecting something like The Raid or John Wick, this is not that kind of movie. It is in the last 20 minutes of it, but, like, most of it is not. He's making an art action film with art in a capital A.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing can be annoying,
But Deb Patel has a really distinctive style that he's created for this here that's very drenched in the culture, that uses lots of close-ups of like various patterns and lights to sort of be disorienting. And I really enjoyed what he was doing cinematography-wise with
this
film.
Yeah, it's very tight shots. It's very quick cuts. Yeah. It's lots of little flashes.
Occasional Terrence Malick-like shots.
Occasional Terrence Malick.
But it's one of those things that can really annoy me sometimes, because it's obvious that he and his stunt crew worked really hard to develop these fights, and then it's just kind of edited with a Cuisinart. But when he does hold the shot, when he's actually using compositions or doing a very deliberate camera move, you realize he really does have chops. And as I was talking to Nathan earlier, it bugged me at first. It's almost exhausting. But after a while, I got on its wavelength and realized, oh, this is a deliberate choice. This isn't some guy just trying everything.
Once you realize that you're inside of a dryer and you're just being shaked around, you start to adjust to it.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my criticism, too. It's like, it is pretty disorienting for a while, but like, I get what they're trying to do. But yeah, I mean, the editing and the cinematography was a little bit disorienting at times. But yeah, whenever it is a real, like an actual, like a post shot where you do see what is going on, and it's not few and far between, it is pretty frequent, they are stunning shots of like just the light composition and everything, like just it almost reminiscent of like some like Nicholas Winding Refn, or even that one sequence in Kill Bill. Or there's a lot of really just awesome sequences. But there are some sequences that are kind of hard to watch because, like, yeah, I sat pretty close to the screen.
We were with Wright, who also watched, and he said he felt motion sick afterwards.
Well, he was also really insanely hungover.
Well, that's true, but usually that doesn't bother
him. I've never seen him, like, almost drop to the floor. I thought we were about to have to call an ambulance after honest.
I kept checking on him. I was like, is he going to be all right?
When I got up from my chair, I was like, I did like kind of lean up against the rail for a little
bit. When we got out of the movie, I saw Wright in the hallway and I just like tapped on his back and was like, what's up, baby? And he's like, oh God. Oh. And just almost started to like have like full body vertigo.
I don't know. I mean, I
take Dramamine before watching this movie.
Quite positive. If you're one of those people, I'm the guy who rides roller coasters all the time, so no problem for me.
If you
I'm
complained good. About feeling motion sick after you saw the Blair Witch Project. Yeah. Imagine that times 10.
Yeah, I've seen all the Paul Greengrass movies and all the Michael Bay movies. I can handle it. It just occasionally bothered me.
It doesn't ruin the movie.
I don't. Well, not at all. I think it adds to the movie, personally. I mean, we've seen a lot of movies that are fighting movies, this sort of thing, and I think that he's creating something kind of new here. Now, do I generally, as a huge fan of action films that are really determined on great choreography and making you feel like you're really watching these people fight, did I occasionally go like, I'd kind of just like to see this fight because it looks insanely cool?
Yeah,
sure. But it is one of those like, I'm gonna let this movie take me where it wants to take me, and I think that that's not a terrible thing. Like it's, I said, he's making an art action film here. He's not trying to make The Raid. He's trying to make his own thing, put his own stamp on it. I think overall it really delivers. That sense of disorientation is very intentional.
Yeah,
and because the whole thing has a sort of hallucinatory dreamlike quality to it, and when it mixes it with the mythology and the story and the idea that like maybe there's something going on here spiritually more than just the baseline of the story as it gets into the story of the sort of monkey god and stuff. Like, yeah, I was impressed with the choices that he made. Now, I think this movie could have been shorter, for sure.
Yeah.
It's almost 2 hours long, and I feel like that whole first like act in three quarters probably dragged on a little longer than it needed to.
Yeah, I guess so.
I felt its length.
It wasn't a whole lot of fat to trim, but
so much of the artistic intent of all these disorienting sequences are trying to like give you information into the inside of his head and everything. And after a while, it was like, I got it. But then the movie in the first half would get into these dialogue sequences to like try and explain and more implicitly explain. I'm like, no, I got it. Something bad happened to your mom. This guy did it. He's got this ring on. That's an identifying feature. That was my biggest hang up with the movie, because there's a solid like, this is what, an hour, 45 minutes? There's at least like an hour, 20 minutes of being like, and these are the people he must fight, and this is what happened to his mom, almost played as a reveal.
Yeah, I don't
halfway
know.
Through. Again, I don't felt think, it was weird.
I don't think the plot is the point here. I really don't. No. I think he yeah. is, I think he intentionally chose this simplistic of a plot here because that's not his real goal. His goal here is the socio-political stuff, which is very strongly pronounced throughout this. And indeed, to, like I said, put a stamp on his visual style here, which, you know, a plot that's this simple gives him the room to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that is the... He gives himself a very big, clean canvas to work on. And, you know, he's not muddling it up. There is, in the final third, you really start to see more about the political subtext. Sure. It's there from the beginning.
Yeah.
But they finally address it, and it does play. And, you know, we're kind of ignorant, being Westerners, and people who probably are from that area are going to be more tapped into that.
Sure.
I think people from India, or, you know, whether they're of Muslim background or Hindi background, they're probably going to pick up a lot more out of this than we did.
Sure.
Because there's clearly things like, this is based on this guy, this is based on that guy, this fake political party reflects an actual political party that's in power.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. But it still resembles things happening in America in a lot of ways, too. So, you sure. know, you get your own sort of reflection of like, yeah, this is happening actually all over the world right now on some level or another. And sure enough.
Which I don't know if that's comforting or more unsettling.
It's unsettling. But, you know, I mean, this certainly is a strong like, hey, man, fuck the police movie, which is I always enjoy where yeah. you're like, man, let's see some cops which die is, in this movie.
Well, what I mean by that is like you go like, well, I guess it is like it does bring some comfort knowing that it's not just America. I mean, America's really fucked up. But like, okay, this kind of thing happens all over the place. But then again, that sobering moment, like, oh my God, it does happen all over the place. This whole world is fucked.
Well, I also think that, you know, again, those themes export very well all across the world.
Mm.
And I think there's also certain themes in here that feel very fresh. It is, again, as Chris pointed out, it's a very simple story. But he adds these new levels to it that we haven't seen, at least not here in Western theaters. I was quite surprised to see that, you know, you have this sort of character. We understand that he's he's Islamic. You know, his family and was destroyed by the predominant culture, the Hindi. And at some point, he, like in most of these movies, you know, he finds a mentor. Your hero gets the shit kicked out of him. He's at his lowest point. He's rescued. He's given a mentor figure. And I almost don't want to spoil it because the mentor figure in this and the community that he finds himself a part of, who are Hindus, who worship a version of like a half Shiva, half Kali, you know, the creator and the destroyer. I was not expecting that in this movie. And I can imagine there's going to be some people who are going to go to this movie and they're going to be like, oh yeah, this is like John Wick with brown people. This is cool. And then suddenly... we're going to get it. Those like, this is too woke. They are going to get all the anti-woke guys are going to, their minds are
going to
melt.
They're not going to see this movie.
They might because they might be stupid enough to think
they're
it's just an action movie
to that crowd.
You know, they're like, just thinking like, oh, yeah, it's John Wick.
They'll be like, at least
yeah,
they're
but they're
going to
see John Wick is not, they're going to see John Wick is not white. They're going to like, they can't even tell Indians and Muslims apart more often. I know my family can't.
So. I'm sure there's plenty of Cretans who also like The Raid. They're just guys who like action films that are dumb and cool and all that, but the political and social subtext right. of this, I think, is going to throw some people a monkey wrench, and that,
so to speak,
depending on how you feel about it, that's either going to be great or you're going to walk out of the theater going, movies are too
woke
today.
So not talk about the hypothetical audience that is going to go see this and think it's too woke. We got to give some credit to fucking Dev Patel as a physical actor.
Yeah,
he was fucking incredible.
Oh my God, yeah. Like, I haven't followed as much Dev Patel as I would like to, but I mostly know him from Slumdog Millionaire episode. Seeing him in this, I was just in awe of, like, watching just what a badass he is. And like, seeing him, like, he I do like the protagonists who, like, they're badasses, but they can get their asses kicked.
Yeah.
And you see
and
him
take
damage.
And how much character he puts into every inch of his being in this.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know so much about him without him even saying a word.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether it's you're seeing things through his eyes or you're focusing on
probably
his eyes.
Probably had, like, 20 lines of dialogue in the entire movie.
Yeah, he doesn't say a lot. He doesn't need to.
It's so fucking
the movie,
good.
It shows us instead of telling us, which I generally appreciate. But let's go into final thoughts. Nathan, why don't you get us started?
So about showing and not telling that much, I felt like this movie paints with a very broad brush, which I can appreciate. I like a lot of movies that paint with a very broad brush, but I felt like after a while it wasn't convinced that it was painting with as broad of a brush as it's going through, especially in telling details about the character, in explaining the entire political struggle that lies in the subtext of the movie. I felt like I got so much out of it more visually than I did with any of the scripting or any of the moments when it felt like it needed to implicitly explain itself. And that kind of got away from how fun of a time I had with the movie. I think Dev Patel's incredible. This is, in my eyes, his audition for James Bond. Like, dude looks good in a fucking tuxedo.
Oh, hell yeah.
He's clearly capable, and the dude is hot as fuck. Like, I mean, it's just, he's a fucking movie star, and I think this is a promising debut. I ended up enjoying the movie more in the last third, especially as it picks up into the action, which I found to be spotty in the first half. At points, I felt like I was being thrown into a dryer, which I understand is intentional, but after a while, I'm just like, I just want to see, like, a clean knife hit. I mean, you know, I think of the fight scene in The Killer, the David Fincher film, as being that, being coherent, but also so messy and so hard to, like, really gauge what's going on. I found the movie to be mostly pretty enjoyable once you get to the end. I would give it 7 out of 10 mangoes up in the sun.
Okay. Mike McAllister.
No, this movie was great. I love the direction of it. As discombobulating as it can be, I think once you get a feel for it, once you settle into, like, this is, you are basically seeing a lot of the movie through his eyes. And I love how minimal, you know, that approach is. You know, when it comes to dialogue, you're just getting all the information you need to know. But also just, yeah, the shot composition is just fucking gorgeous. Whenever you can tell what's going on. And I again, I don't really know as much about Dev Patel, but I like seeing, actors really take on something that seems like a real challenge. And, seeing, like, heroes that, yeah, they're kick-ass heroes, but you're seeing them, you know, really get beat up as well. Yeah, I mean, like, there's some things that are a little bit disorienting about it, but it's not that big of a holdback to it. And also, again, the dog lives, as far as we know.
It's starved to death later on off screen.
Fuck
that
you.
That seems likely, actually, yeah.
In likelihood, but yeah, we don't see it.
It was an actual slum dog.
It's that 9,000 rupee rice, though, every once in a while.
Slum dog, not a millionaire.
Yeah. But no, I like this a lot, and I would highly recommend to a lot of people who are into this sort of thing. And I do love seeing action. Like, I think what I was trying to get out of it was that it's an unlikely hero kind of movie. And an unlikely badass, and that's one of the best films of this of the genre, I think, in recent years. It's not going to be John Wick. I'll say it's kind of like what I wanted Only God Forgives to be. So I'm going to give it 7.5 puppet shows that went really south way too quickly.
Marco, it's a first-time director. And it has that energy of somebody who's going to just throw everything they ever wanted to do at the camera. I think Dev Patel, 2 or 3 pictures down the line, would make this exact same kind of movie, but probably would address a lot of the complaints that we have, mainly the over-reliance on shaky cam, some of the pacing. It is a very simple story, and it's stretched out, and because of the reveals, you know, it's a simple story told in a complicated way. And that's going to work for some people more than others. For the most part, once I locked onto its wavelength and when it gets hallucinatory and, you know, disorienting on purpose, it's really strong. There are moments, though, when I did want to just see the fights shot and staged in a more traditional manner. Because when he does that, and I think this is his intention, or at least his editor's, you have all that disorienting stuff in the fight, and then suddenly the camera stops moving, the shot's locked off, and he just hits you with something just incredible. There are brutal kills in this movie.
Very South Korean. Oh, yeah.
It's so fucking visceral. There are moments where, like, I'm pretty, you know, jaded, but even I was like, oh, god
damn.
Oh, the knife
and,
with the...
Even at one point... Oh, yeah. You know, at one point, even Chris leaned over and he's like, well, that's new. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I've never seen that before. And if he hadn't, if he had been doing that while the camera was flying around everywhere, we would have missed it. Yeah. He had enough sense to know this is the moment where I slow things down and I show you what's happening and I shoot with clarity. I think that's a really strong directorial instinct, and I think he's only going to get better.
Oh, yeah.
To Nate's point that, you know, this is his audition for James Bond, I don't care if they never make another James Bond movie again, frankly.
Because No Time to Die was so good.
Sure, we can go with that. but I think this is, in answer to that, I think this is his audition to direct other movies. Because I could see somebody going like, hey, Dev Patel, we have an action franchise, and we think you've got a lot of juice and a lot of energy
it's
and a lot of
James
new ideas.
It's called James and Bond.
Okay. Well, calm down over there.
Fuck it. You know what? Fuck 008. Let him direct James Bond.
Exactly.
And, there we go.
And star.
And star, because that's a very hard thing to do. Not many people can pull it off and have to do as much work as he's doing here. It's a phenomenal performance from this guy who is also directing himself, shooting on a low budget. And you know, shooting in the streets of Mumbai and on location for a lot of it. I was very impressed by this. It is an art house action film, and that may color your experience of it. But I had a great time with this, and I look forward to seeing more. I've always looked forward to seeing more Dev Patel. Now I'm looking more to seeing more of his directorial work. I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10 drifting tuk-tuks.
You know, I'm kind of, Marco, you took the words out of my mouth on so many things and phrased it extremely well.
Well, let's just end now.
So, well, a few things to add. I just want to say that, like, there's not a lot of action films that are specifically for the type of stoner who likes to take the more psychedelic weed and just get wildly blasted while watching a movie. But this is one of those. This is those guys who are like, I like the stuff that doesn't make you tired, the stuff that makes you, like, kind of wired and also, like, see trails everywhere. This is your action movie to watch. It is going to be, I want to get really, I never get high anymore. I will get high again.
I took an edible. It's pretty great.
Then why did you give it 7.5?
Yeah. Also, though, I do want to have a complaint here. I think there are some musical cues here that were poorly thought out.
Sure.
There's a moment where they're like, oh, there's the prostitute with the heart of gold, and the movie, for fuck's sakes, plays Roxanne by the Police. And I was like, seriously?
Yeah, that was a little on the nose.
I was like, that was the biggest
slow down over running water.
Yeah.
But at least it was a cool remix.
And then it kept doing this thing that's like a total, like, 80s, like 48 hours type, like, musical sting where you hear this, like, dong, and then there's like a doot, 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 doot. Dong. And I was like, wow, I've heard this in like 30 80s action films. So it's like,
I like some of the soundtrack
here?
But it's weird when you hear those, like, those rave remixes.
I for the life of me couldn't tell what you were doing. I was like, is this Sicario soundtrack? Johan Johansson.
You know, if I was to like pull it out and isolate it, you go like, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yeah, please do after the recording.
I
don't have
like
access
that,
to the film, unfortunately, okay. At this point.
I did enjoy their use of that as much as I tend to not like techno remixes, that one they did of Jefferson Airplane was pretty cool.
I mean, sure, I guess. The music did not wow me here. The sound mixing for the action is fantastic. Okay, no question. Okay. But overall, I think this is really great. I just think most people are not ready for the type of movie it is. I think they're going to go in expecting a John Wick, and that's not what this is at all. Now, if that's all you want to see, and somebody has it on once it comes out on like Blu-ray or whatever, just go to the last act and watch that will give you exactly what you're looking for.
The end of the second act action scene is pretty incredible, too.
It's true. Yeah. But you know, the real delivery is like once he comes, you know, once he gets his spiritual shit together and the training montage and all that and comes back, and then you're like, oh, he went from a guy who was pretty tough to a guy who was an unstoppable juggernaut of violence. And you're like, yeah, that's what we wanted to see, right? So, and I did, in fact, want to see that, and it delivered. So I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 times you invite your buddies to a giant massacre and don't realize that they're going to get way more dressed up than you are, and you feel really embarrassed about
it. They're like, damn, girl, you really got, you really put it all out there.
It's like, oh, shit, was this a thing? Were we all supposed to wear this?
Wait, we're all matching? No one gave me the memo.
I just came in a suit. What the fuck?
Right? I thought this was black tie, not crazy cult, like, dresses.
Do I need to go back to the car and change?
Do you have an extra scythe?